I'm Tracy from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Are you a small business owner or even someone who dreams of entrepreneurship? Then check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from iHeart Podcasts and Intuit QuickBooks. Join hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres as they interview entrepreneurs sharing insights around starting and nurturing a small business. You won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter. That's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered. For just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Welcome to Stuff You Missed in History Class from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hello and welcome to our podcast. I'm Holly Fry.
And I'm Tracy V. Wilson.
And when people talk about the subject of today's podcast, he's often described as a genius, but also something of a rather caustic figure. And while he had insights that even today, thinking about sort of how he came to his conclusions, they're downright baffling. But he also had a reputation for being pretty arrogant and rubbing his colleagues the wrong way, which is commonly cited as having been pretty detrimental to his career and to sort of his proper place in astrophysics history. So we're going to talk today about the father of dark matter, who is Dr. Fritz Zwicky.
I'm actually kind of amazed that I did not realize how early he was working.
Right?
Somehow, somehow I thought dark matter was much more recent than this.
Well, the big confirmation was much more recent, which we'll talk about a little bit, but he was onto it way before anybody else was.
Right. So to go ahead and start blowing your mind right from the beginning, Fritz was born in Varna, Bulgaria on February 14th, 1898. His father was a Swiss merchant, and his mother was Czechoslovakian.
And when he was just 6, his father, thinking that he would surely go into the family business, he was sent to live with his grandparents in Glarus, Switzerland. And the plan was that he would study commerce while he was there and learn about business. But he did have a head for numbers, but it turned out that that interest fell into the areas of physics and non-financial mathematics.
They're really not similar at all in their math. In 1916, he enrolled in Einstein's alma mater, the Zurich Polytechnic Institute, to study physics.
And in 1925, after he had graduated, and he's said to have been, you know, very adoring of his professors that he thought were geniuses, he ended up getting a grant of an international fellowship from the Rockefeller Foundation, and he used the money to travel to California so he could work for Robert Millikan as first an assistant professor and then a professor of theoretical physics at the California Institute of Technology, which you would know as Caltech. It's in Pasadena, California. And at this point, some of the most exciting astronomical discoveries of the modern age were happening at Caltech. The 1920s were just a huge time for them. So, for example, Well, through the lenses of the Hooker telescope, Edwin Hubble was making important observations about the vast array of galaxies in space and the expanding universe. And through a couple of large grants, including one from the Rockefeller Foundation, Caltech was building, you know, really advanced instruments and basically developing its facilities to remain on the front line of research in astronomy.
So he had gone to what really seemed like a mecca for astronomers, but Fritz was a physicist. The two worlds do have a lot of crossover, though, and he was excited by both of the disciplines, and so he thought that the only course for him was to teach both courses. And that's how he became the first astrophysicist at Caltech.
And while he was at Caltech, he also met a man named Walter Bada, who was a German-American observational astronomer, and the two began collaborating. And some of that collaboration would become very important.
Fritz Zwicky came up with many, many theories about astrophysics during his career. His research and his theories were both just incredibly advanced.
So, for example, in 1933, Zwicky put forth his theory that there is, in fact, a huge amount of unseen matter in any given galaxy. This was a completely new idea. Everyone thought that what you could see were the stars and that that's what was out there. But this idea was based on his observations of the Coma Galaxy Cluster. And based on the visible matter that was in the cluster and how it was behaving, he concluded that there simply was not enough of it, if we only counted the visible pieces, to provide enough gravity to keep these fast-moving galaxies together, and that there had to be something else in the mix producing enough gravity that it kept this cluster from flinging apart.
That invisible substance was what he called dark matter, and he published this theory in Helvetica Physica Acta. In his own words, quote, "In order to receive an average Doppler effect of 1,000 kilometers a second or more, which is what we have observed, the average density in the Coma system would have to be at least 400 times greater than that of visible matter. If this can be shown to be the case, then it would have the surprising result that dark matter is present in the universe in far greater density than visible matter."
I feel compelled to say again, 1933.
Yeah, this is...
He was drawing these conclusions way before anybody else was thinking about them.
It's possibly because I didn't really learn about dark matter until studying astronomy in college, that in my brain this was a much more recent theory than it really was.
Well, there are also some other reasons, which is that a lot of people dismissed him as kind of cockamamie, and we'll get to why as we go on. But in addition to this work on dark matter and building on the work of Indian physicist Subramanian Chandrasekhar, who later became famous for his mathematical work related to black holes, Zwicky and Bada, working together, described a neutron star. So this is a collapsed core of a star with an incredibly dense mass. For example, according to the National Geographic online entry on neutron stars, a sugar cube-sized chunk of neutron star is estimated to weigh roughly 100 million tons here on planet Earth. So that's how dense it is.
For scientific context, the neutron had only been discovered a year prior. So quick review, just in case you need it. Positively charged protons and neutral neutrons make up the nucleus of an atom, while negatively charged electrons form an orbital cloud around the nucleus.
Yeah, so we only knew what neutrons were for a little while before Zwicky was, to what his colleagues felt like, jumping to the conclusion that neutron stars were, in fact, you know, sort of a larger scale version of some of the things they had witnessed at the atomic scale. But really, he was just intuiting some pretty impressive things. And he proposed that as a star burns out its fuel, its gravity is so great that it causes a compression of such magnitude at the core that protons and electrons are crushed together to form neutrons. So if you think about particle physics, it's very similar, just on a much bigger scale.
This also set the groundwork for Zwicky and Bada's description of a supernova. As a star core implodes, it propels this massive explosion of the star's outer layers. Such explosions, they theorized, were also sources of cosmic rays, or high-energy subatomic particles, that travel through space at a velocity that approaches the speed of light.
Yeah, cosmic rays had been observed before, but no one knew where they came from. And Zwicky and Botta felt like this was where they came from. The pair first presented these theories at a conference of other scientists in 1933, and subsequently they published them as a paper in 1934. And that paper about neutron stars, cosmic rays, and supernova has really been described as prescient and incredibly important to both physics and astronomy.
In the mid-1930s, certain that supernovas and other galaxies were something that we could observe, Zwicky convinced the director of the Mount Wilson Observatory to build a special telescope with a wide field of view so that he could observe and photograph multiple galaxies at the same time. That telescope enabled him to identify 12 supernovas over the course of 3 years.
And that work also gave him really firm ground to stand on when he went back and asked for an even bigger Schmidt telescope. And that request was granted. The 48-inch telescope that was built after this second request was installed at Mount Palomar, and surveys of the northern sky conducted with it laid the groundwork for decades of astronomical study.
As the 1930s stretched on, Zwicky developed a theory of gravitational lenses, and it was based on Einstein's theory of general relativity. This theory was that if you had a galaxy in your line of sight, that galaxy could distort the image of more distant galaxies by bending their starlight. He asserted that by measuring the distortion that a galaxy caused could then give astronomers a sense of the weight of the lensing galaxy.
Yeah, which is, again, this is in the 30s. This was a lot of extremely, it almost seems like a leap of faith to people that might not understand his line of logic.
Well, and the idea that the gravity of something could distort the light of something behind it is now kind of taken for granted in the field.
I mean, it had been discussed to some degree prior to that, but he was the first one that was like, no, this is happening on a mammoth scale. It's affecting everything we observe. And while giving the Oxford University Halley Lecture in 1948, which is an annual lecture that is quite an honor to give, Zwicky spoke at length about what he called morphology, which is a systematic approach to studying the structure and form of scientific and technological topics by analyzing all possible parameters and solutions to any given related question. And this is one of those things that he really felt like he had been doing all of his life, even before he had a name for it. And he was founder and president of the Society for Morphological Research. And in later life, he wrote of morphology, quote, "I feel that I have finally found the philosopher's stone in what I call the morphological outlook and method." So he basically was trying to explain, like, I know what I'm doing. I've always been doing it. This is why I'm able to come to conclusions that other people don't see. I'm just so systematic in how I approach every possible issue that I look at that I'm going to eventually hit on the right thing. It's an interesting approach. And it's very methodical. It makes a lot of sense when you read about it. It kind of forming this matrix of possible outcomes and options for every possible variable in a situation. It's a lot of work, but it also does sort of create this beautiful order and structure to what may have been completely incomprehensible before. And before we get to sort of the problems with all of these amazing theories he had being accepted by his peers, do you want to take a quick word from a sponsor?
Oh, sure. I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Say goodbye to complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping, and say hello to an advantage with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Every business faces challenges, but shipping shouldn't be one of them. So keep things simple with clear, upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges for Saturday deliveries, residential deliveries, or fuel. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there, helping you counter the rising costs of doing business with a budget-friendly alternative. And keep things reliable with on-time ground shipping, ensuring your shipments get to where they need to go while maintaining your hard-earned reputation. USPS Ground Advantage is your ticket to easy, cost-effective, and dependable shipping. It's the complete delivery service your business needs to rise above the competition. There's never been a better time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
So, despite his incredibly advanced insights into astrophysics, many of the assertions that Zwicky made in his career really just hit a brick wall with his colleagues. He had this incredible knack for finding conflict with the scientific community, and this basically is really attributed to his personality rather than his ideas. Even though his ideas were very advanced and hard for people to deal with, his way of presenting them and sort of dismissing people that didn't get them is really why he probably had so many problems kind of gaining ground with his work.
Almost any and every synonym for persnickety has been used to describe Zwicky at some point in time. He's often characterized as being just incredibly arrogant and dismissive of other people. And he even fought with Botta, who was his real collaborator. According to astronomer and Bruce medalist Jesse Greenstein, Zwicky called Botta a Nazi at one point during World War II, and Botta was infuriated, but also afraid of Zwicky.
Yeah, apparently from that point on, having the two men in a room together was not really a viable option ever, because they would not just bicker, but it would become extremely heated and very, very passionate and angry in a hurry. And while there are many, many instances of people saying that Zwicky could be a pill, and that is a very gentle way to put it, his own feelings about others in his field are made incredibly clear in his own writing. It's not a case of like, these people are all saying he was crabby. It's in writing. He said some pretty unkind things. The introduction to his catalog of selected compact galaxies and of post-eruptive galaxies, which came out in 1971, is basically full of criticism of his peers, and he calls them out by name.
It's really, really bitter in its tone. And it's full of all kinds of snark, like, quote, "Again and again, scientists and technical specialists arrive at stagnation points where they think they know it all."
And he did underline that in the text. Another was, "The naivety of some of the theoreticians at all times is really appalling."
Another is, the most renowned observational astronomers in the 1930s also made claims that now have been proved to be completely erroneous. This retarded real progress in astronomy by several decades since the said observers had a monopoly on the use of the large reflectors of the Mount Wilson and Palomar observatories, and inasmuch as they kept out all dissenters.
And then this gem. Today's sycophants and plain thieves seem to be free, in American astronomy in particular, to appropriate discoveries and inventions made by lone wolves and nonconformists, for whom there is never any appeal to the hierarchies and for whom even the public press is closed because of censoring committees within the scientific institutions.
He makes it a point to clarify that he's the only person to have clearly stated what a galaxy is, refers to some scientists as scatterbrains, and even calls out Hubble, Botta, and contemporary Henry Norris Russell, and others, with very specific criticisms of the ways their incorrect assertions set back the study of astrophysics.
Yeah, he really does not hold back. It's very clear that at that late point in his life, he was in his 70s at the time, he was still just super angry at how he had been treated. And it's kind of funny, he includes in the text of this introduction a letter which was written by Edwin Hubble to the Scientific Monthly, which had run a piece about some of the work that Zwicky and Botta had done together. And in it, Hubble points out to the publication that an error that they made about attributing two dwarf nebula to Botta instead of Zwicky. And Fritz, you know, includes all of this in his thing about this Edwin Hubble trying to correct this error. And then he points out that, in his opinion, this is a completely rare instance of gentlemanly behavior in the field of astronomy, and that he sort of, it's the exception rather than the rule, in his opinion.
With all this in mind, it just becomes really easy to dismiss this guy as a cranky curmudgeon when reading this rather infamous introduction. But it's also clear that his bitterness and anger came from years of having his work dismissed, even when the same work was clearly being verified and even used by other researchers.
Yeah, I can see where you would land at this sort of very crabby mindset. You know, if you're saying, hey, I think this thing is happening, and people go, oh, you are a crazy idiot, and they're scribbling the notes down and then using them in their own work.
Yeah, being called a crazy idiot is no fun.
I would be bitter as well, I think. And as it turns out, most of Zwicky's predictions and theories, which he arrived at through what he called directed intuition, which is kind of part of that bigger morphology idea, were absolutely correct. While the theoretical existence of neutron stars was validated by work in nuclear physics before then, the first neutron stars were actually identified in Zwicky's lifetime in the 1960s.
He died suddenly on February 8, 1974, at the age of 75. But during the 1970s and beyond, astronomers were conducting research and making discoveries that continued to validate what he had been saying during his life.
I'm Tracy V. Wilson from Stuff You Missed in History Class. Did you know small businesses make up 99.9% of all businesses in the United States? The world is powered by entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks. And every episode, hosts Austin Hankwitz and Janice Torres talk to entrepreneurs about how they've grown from the lessons of launching and nurturing a small business, and how they have found success being their own boss. From the excitement of first starting out to finding the right tools and resources to process invoices and payments like QuickBooks Money, you won't want to miss these inspiring stories of entrepreneurship and discovering ways to business differently so you can too. And if you're a small business owner or even someone dreaming of starting your own business, then you'll want to check out Season 2 of Mind the Business, small business success stories from Ruby Studio, from iHeartMedia, and Intuit QuickBooks.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
Looking to part ways with complicated, expensive, and uncertain shipping? Then give your business the edge it needs with USPS Ground Advantage shipping from the United States Postal Service. Keep everything simple with clear upfront pricing and no unexpected surcharges. Keep things affordable with some of the lowest prices out there. And keep it all reliable with on-time ground shipments. It's time to turn shipping to your advantage. Learn how at usps.com/advantage. USPS Ground Advantage. Simple, affordable, reliable.
In the 1970s, Vera Rubin, W.K. Ford, and other astronomers were able to verify the idea of dark matter.
That is why you think of it as being a much later discovery. Vera Rubin is mostly associated with dark matter, and it really was in the 70s kind of like the big announcement was always attributed to these people. So I think that's probably why you think it is a more recent thing than it was. And then in 1979, so 5 years after Zwicky had passed, the first gravitational lens and proof that it was actually working the way he had described was discovered. And the lensing effect, as Zwicky described it in 1937, is actually now applied to measure the universe and its contents with regularity. They're sort of always exploring the parameters of the universe using the very concepts of gravitational lens that he set forth in the late 30s.
Fritz Zwicky's youngest daughter, Barbarina, has become his advocate. She's really tirelessly written letters to science publications, bloggers, journals, and news outlets, pointing out that her father was very far ahead of his peers in space research and in his theories.
Yeah, she really wants to ensure that he gets his due in the historical record. And to one magazine, she wrote, quote, "Fritz Zwicky revealed a genesis of astounding cosmological achievements that still illuminate the scientific world. He was a scientific prophet and the sacrificial lamb for the provincial judgment of his colleagues. His emendation of intellect was such apodictic truth, and his presages were of such advance that the standard mind only could falter in their presence."
And while he definitely had some rough edges, Zwicky also had a really generous streak. When World War II ended, he organized the Committee for Aid to War-Stricken Scientific Libraries. And this group, which consisted of Zwicky himself and a handful of volunteers, amassed literally tons of scientific literature and donated it to libraries that had been damaged during the war. Zwicky devoted his weekends and spare weekday hours to this project for years, and he packaged and shipped the materials himself.
Yeah, I read one source that said that it was approximated to be 15 tons of materials that he'd eventually shipped over the years, but I couldn't find that validated. And in an obituary article about Zwicky, Albert G. Wilson, director of the Society for Morphological Research, wrote, "Zwicky's point was that there are enough men and women of goodwill to make such projects a success if only they are pushed with determination. Availability of funds is not a prerequisite. He felt that such projects as the book distribution do more for establishing ties of confidence between different nations and races than can be achieved by speechmaking, legislation, or high-sounding efforts of international cooperation."
He also served as director of the American chapter of Pestalozzi Foundation, which was founded to foster World War II orphans.
And while Zwicky had conflict with his professional peers, the students and staff at Caltech really did see a much more affable side of the man, though he could certainly be a demanding teacher and mentor. And we have a funny story about that.
The February 1974 issue of the Caltech publication Engineering and Science featured an investigation into a rumor that students had once managed to pull one over on him by creating a fictitious student. According to this legend, in the 1931-1932 academic year, a group of grad students allegedly worked together under the false identity of an undergrad in an effort to achieve the impossible, which was to make an A in a course that Zwicky taught. While the surviving students of that year all insisted the story was true, the publication never got Zwicky's side of the story due to his sudden death during the writing of the article.
I find that to be such a great pity, because I really would have loved to have heard his side of it. I love that they just wanted to, like, make him give someone an A, even though he, I think, never intended to do so. I just love that that's a fun, that somebody tried to trick him, or a group of people. But it sounds like it was all in a very kind of good-natured sort of way, which I love. So in his lifetime, Fritz Zwicky authored literally hundreds of articles, numerous books. He held dozens of patents. He was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom for his work in rocket propulsion during World War II. The Royal Astronomical Society of Great Britain gave him their society's gold medal.
And he's credited with discovering 122 supernovas during his work. That number is a record.
Yeah, unbroken. He still holds it. He is buried in Glarus, Switzerland, where there is also his Zwicky Museum displaying some of his papers and scientific work.
There are an asteroid, a lunar crater, and a galaxy named after him.
And curmudgeon or no, he was undoubtedly a visionary. He intuited cosmic truths that many others in his field simply could not grasp at the time he introduced them. So to me, such a fascinating figure, and I have a love for him. I like all the cranky ones. Those tend to be my favorites for some reason.
Do you also have some listener mail? Is it cranky?
I do.
Is it cranky listener mail?
It's not cranky at all. It's actually interesting, and it's something we get a lot of. And it is from our listener, Autumn, and she says, "Hello, Holly and Tracy. I am a frequent listener of your podcast. I enjoy you both as podcast personalities, and what I particularly commend is the evidence of your thorough and reliable research. My side, we certainly try. This spring, I will be graduating from university with a degree in theater and minors in TV, cinema, and psychology. With a wide range of hobbies and interests, I am still a bit lost on the career finding area. What I would like to know about, if you'd be willing to share, are your journeys. How did you come to How Stuff Works? Where did you begin, and what were/are the passions that brought you to where you are and the people you've become? This is a question we get a lot, is kind of how we ended up doing this. And for both of us, I think the answer is that it was quite a circuitous route. I have had a million different jobs and multiple careers. I've managed hair salons. I worked in a library for more than a decade as a technical services assistant and acquisitions manager, for lack of a better title. I worked in marketing for an online company. I worked as both an admin assistant and then a writer at a network for a while. And then I ended up here. And I got hired as an editor, and Tracy and I started podcasting for Pop Stuff because one of our bosses heard us riffing at a party and thought we should try it.
That's really
a duo.
That's exactly what happened. That's a completely true story.
Yeah.
At that point, I had already been at How Stuff Works for several years. I started at a staff writer in 2005. And I guess at that point, I was site director.
And that's how we landed here. And then as while Dublina was on maternity leave, I came on as a guest for history. And then Dublina came back and decided that she wanted to make a career move elsewhere. And so then I came on with Sarah for a little while, and then Sarah also made a career move, and Tracy joined me here, and we sunsetted Pop Stuff, and that's how we ended up on history.
Yep.
That's the story. So it's not really a course I could plot out for anyone.
No, and we get a lot of questions from people that are like, What do you recommend as far as getting jobs for history majors? And that is a question we super cannot answer because neither we nor any other host who has ever hosted this podcast has a history degree.
Yeah, the one person that I know in my life that has a history degree, and she actually has a graduate degree in historical studies, is a librarian. So that's the one instance I know, but I don't know that that path is going to be for everyone. She also has a graduate degree in library science. So, yeah. I mean, I think we're kind of at a weird, I don't know if it's weird. We're at a point, it sort of, in terms of the career world where it's so much different, I think, even than when Tracy and I went through college, that it's a little bit almost tricky to chart a direct path to anything, you know, unless you're in like a very kind of established field that follows a pretty set course that has not really shifted, particularly with all of the economic shifts that have gone on. Like, if you know you want to be a veterinarian and you go through college and you get your biology degree and then you go to veterinary school and you get your degree in that, and that's kind of your natural career path. But there aren't many career paths like that anymore, I think, especially if you're in like the liberal arts degree area.
Well, even if you're not, like Patrick's degree, his undergraduate and first graduate degree are engineering degrees, and he is a librarian now with a separate Master of Library Science to go with his previous engineering studies. So I think pretty much everyone I know has a winding, circuitous route to get to where they are now.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's we don't have a direct path. My thing is kind of like, I think how we both ended up in history is that both Tracy and I have always liked a lot of aspects of history. We both are readers. We both kind of just like learning new things. So way before we were ever in any sort of universe thinking about a podcast like this, before podcasts even existed, we were kind of reading about history all the time anyway.
Yeah. Well, and it, from a completely practical sense, the past hosts were leaving and we needed new ones.
So it made sense because we both do like history that it was a pretty natural transition from that point of view. So that's the scoop. I'm sorry it's not a direct, like, here's your next step. But the best thing I could say is just keep studying all the things you love. And eventually an opportunity will probably present itself to put some of that into play as long as you're, you know, working hard at other things and making your way in the world. I it's hard for me because I do like structure, so I wish that I could tell you, here's how. But yeah, just keep learning everything you are interested in. Learn all the time.
Yep.
Learn about things you're not interested in, because sometimes those pay off in other ways. If you would like to write to us, probably not for career advice, because we're apparently not great at giving it, other than saying work hard and study things that are interesting. You can do so at historypodcast@howstuffworks.com. You can also connect with us at facebook.com/MissedInHistory, on Twitter @MissedInHistory, at missedinhistory.tumblr.com, and on pinterest.com/MissedInHistory. If you would like to get some Missed in History goodies, like shirts or tote bags or mouse pads or coffee cups, you can do so at missedinhistory.spreadshirt.com. If you would like to learn a little bit more about the topic of today's podcast, you can go to our parent site, How Stuff Works, type in dark matter in the search bar, and you will get How Dark Matter Works. And you can study that and almost anything else you could like at our parent site, which is howstuffworks.com. If you would like to read show notes and browse about on our history topics, you can do that at our site, which is missedinhistory.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
This is Raquel Willis from Queer Chronicles. Right now, there are close to 500 anti-LGBTQ plus bills in state legislatures across the country. Lambda Legal is leading the charge against these hateful bills that target mostly trans and non-binary people. You can fight discrimination and help write the next chapter of Lambda Legal history. To learn more about their open cases and to donate, visit lambdalegal.org. That's lambdalegal.org.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.